Hi, everybody. Welcome to No Story is Sacred. If you've never listened before, basically we're four siblings who grew up talking about the art of storytelling. Now that we're adults, we're still talking about it, and we're inviting you to join the conversation. I'm Kat, and I want to join the City Watch.
I'm Brendan, and I'm wondering, where does Sam Vimes fall on the cynicism versus idealism curve?
He fell off it. And then he got drunk at the bottom.
Yes.
I'm Pippin, and a woman is like a city, so I might just be New York.
Ooh, the greatest city in the world.
Yeah!
And I'm Alex, and I have this weird crown-shaped birthmark right where you never expect.
Today we're talking about the 1989 novel Guards, Guards by Terry Pratchett, so spoilers abound. If you want specific content warnings about things we may talk about, check out the show notes on nostoryisacred.com. For those of you who've never read Guards, Guards, the summary according to Goodreads is, "Here there be dragons, and the denizens of Ankh-Morpork wish one huge fire breather would return from whence it came. Long believed extinct, a superb specimen of Draco Nobilis, noble dragon for those who don't understand italics, has appeared in Discworld's greatest city. Not only does this unwelcome visitor have a nasty habit of charbroiling everything in its path, in rather short order it is crowned king. It is a noble dragon, after all. Meanwhile, back at the Unseen University, an ancient and long-forgotten volume, The Summoning of Dragons, is missing from the library's shelves. To the rescue comes Captain Vimes, Constable Carrot, and the rest of the Night Watch who, along with other brave citizens, risk everything, including a good roasting, to dethrone the Flying Monarch and restore order to Ankh-Morpork before it's burned to a crisp. That's a very long description.
Jeez.
Fuck off.
Okay, a spoilery can't, like, that's fine, but it's also...
I mean, to be fair, we did war not 30 seconds ago.
Well, say you're a new reader, and that description.
It's the friends you make along the way that's more important, but also the ordering is backwards.
Yeah. Look, what it clearly is, this is clearly back cover copy, and it's meant to show that it's tongue-in-cheek and kind of funny and ha-ha-ha.
You know, I had the option of picking the back cover copy, which is slightly different than this one, but I said I didn't like it as much.
I forgive you.
Thank you.
So
I don't.
Fuck off.
So let's lay some groundwork. This is a book by Terry Pratchett. It's like the eighth. It's the eighth in the series. If you have never read Terry Pratchett before, and or if you have read any of the books up to this point and decided you didn't like Terry Pratchett, I beg you, try this one again.
Yeah, most people, when they go like, oh, I've tried Discworld, and I fell into this trap too, like, I've tried Discworld, didn't really care for it, it's because they started off with Color of Magic.
Don't do it.
This is like Parks and Recreation. You can't start from the beginning.
Start at season two.
Exactly.
Or season three, really.
Wait a second. Is Rincewind Brindaniquits?
Rindaniquits. Or Brandanawind.
Brandanawind.
Definitely Guards, Guards is I would think, one of the early entry points that can get you past the hump.
Yeah, either you start with Guards, Guards or...
Weird Sisters.
I like Guards, Guards because... It's the start of the good Ankh-Morpork stories.
So what I liked about Guards, Guards is one of the earlier Discworld books I remember reading. I might have read Small Gods before it because of who I am as a person.
Another good entry point, by the way.
Yeah, it's been a very, very long time since I've read it, though. Mm-hmm. I should reread it.
Well, it takes place like 400 years in the past, and so you don't need to be really aware of current Discworld.
Yeah, but what I like about it is Brendan mentioned the cynicism hope curve. Cynicism idealism, sorry, curve. Mm-hmm. And that's a legit way to look at it, and how everybody falls on the scale, and these questions of morality and doing what's right, even if it's annoying and obnoxious and no one is going to appreciate it.
No one ever does.
I appreciate that Sam Vimes is a character who's been kicked around, is literally drunk in a gutter when we meet him. You know, has apparently seen some shit, knows that no one appreciates what he does, and likely no one ever will. But the moment things start going badly, he's like, no, fuck this. This is a city of assholes. But this is my city of assholes, and they're just trying their best.
Well, I mean, there's this great line that he has. It's like, nobody can set fire to the city unless it's me. And that's very Sam Vimes.
Oh.
I just love Sam.
Sam's great. So laying even more groundwork, though, Discworld is a flat planet. Ankh-Morpork is one of the largest. It's a city-state that exists, and it is currently run by an extremely administratively savvy autocrat named the Patrician.
Well, his title is Patrician.
Lord Vetinari.
Yeah. And one of my favorite descriptions of him I ever read in various Discworld lore is that Lord Vetinari is a man who firmly believes in one man, one vote. He's the one man, so he gets the one vote.
Well, and he sort of treats the city as, you know, a man with a with a fish tank who very carefully puts together little environments for his fish and possibly stages, you know, small duels between them and so forth. But cooler.
What I appreciate is how both Vimes and the Patrician both love the city and want to take care of it. They're just doing it in very different ways.
Well, when the story starts, the Patrician, as part of his little model making here, has very carefully dismantled the city watch and or really kind of made it, very diminished as an institution, because that's the way he's made his city work. And unfortunately, Sam Vimes and the existing two members of the entire city watch, I'm sorry, the night watch, are the unfortunate recipients of being not important.
You're shooting things a bit early here. It's kind of actually really works because dismantling the watch to that extent kind of removes a whole lot of systemic issues about the police.
Mm.
So get, you know, built back up again.
Can't abuse power if you have no power to abuse.
Huzzah. Yep.
A very good point. And in fact, if you go into if you read multiple books within the guards timeline, you find out that part of the reason why they were taken apart is that Vimes's great grandfather or something like that, was a member of the watch. They used to have a monarchy. He totally beheaded the last king. And the Patrician, not unwisely, is like, do I want to be beheaded anytime soon? No?
No.
Excellent. Let me just fix this little matter. But Pratchett spends a lot of time going back and forth between the reason why to have, if that's grammar, a sort of institution that is focused on the law, focused on justice.
So,
and what justice means.
On that note, let's actually dive into Guards itself.
The plot.
Yeah. So I think we mentioned before, Vimes, the captain of the City Watch, is drunk in a gutter, not in a good place. I think really the events that kick off the story is that a library book gets stolen.
Yeah, real early on, we get a description of the Unseen University where all the wizards hang out and their library and how awesome and dangerous it is. And it's run by the librarian who's an orangutan.
Who, unfortunately, I think in an earlier book, I don't know if that's actually was written or if he just showed up somewhere, is an orangutan. And so, you know, Terry Pratchett having to deal with earlier Terry Pratchett's jokes.
Yep.
And doing it well.
Yeah, I mean, he makes it happen.
If I had been reading a physical copy of the book instead of listening to the audiobook, the whole passage where it describes the library, I would have just underlined and cooed over.
This book does do a lot of objects and locations as characters. Ankh-Morpork is clearly a character in the story. The library is a character.
Speaking about another character, there's also, was it the new recruit that we get to have, like, everything explained to, right?
Very useful.
Oh, yeah.
A good plot device if you do it right.
And I think it was done well here because, was it, it's Carrot.
Carrot Iron Founderson, I think is his last name.
Who is a human raised by dwarves.
He didn't realize he wasn't a dwarf, even though he was over 6 feet tall.
So this did it before the movie Elf, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. And has a very dwarven sense of, I guess, justice or just culture.
I think it's almost a literalness.
Dwarves don't understand metaphor.
Yeah.
And the excuse is that, you know, when you have large, heavy objects constantly, you know, going on around you, it does not do to be wishy-washy with reality.
I appreciate that Pratchett makes these, you know, jokes, you know, how dwarves don't understand metaphor, but also explains why they wouldn't.
Yeah. Well, at this point, this is when he starts doing that. Earlier, there's a lot of puns. It's very Piers Anthony-ish. But as he grows as a writer...
Aww.
There's still a lot of puns.
There's still a lot of puns.
But they sneak up on you.
They're puns that serve the story.
Yeah. I mean, there are parts of this book where occasionally you can see sort of the obvious jokes still there because he's still growing. But he's starting to do a lot of the ones that sort of sneak under the radar and you're already like in the next paragraph before you notice them.
But yes, Carrot has just joined the City Watch because that's his dwarven parents send him there to the city to do good, honorable work. And of course,
to become a man.
Yeah.
And a human.
Yeah. And yeah, the City Watch, they've read about it in the histories and they're like a noble profession.
Well, and he gets in his possession a book of the laws.
The laws and ordinances of Ankh-Morpork.
And, you know, you should follow the law. Yep.
And it just cracked me up every single time Carrot would be, like, reciting various bits of the law.
Including, like, the parentheses.
P-I-I. Yes.
Again, very weird to listen to.
It was really brilliant to listen to it, though, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It would always take me a second to realize what was happening. Which I think... just goes to show what everyone else will be listening to.
Yeah, that's why it works really well. It's like, according to subsection P-I-I-I.
Oh, wait, since you listened to it like I did, can I just take a moment to go that I actually hate the narration?
That's fair. I mean, yeah, we're all entitled.
Actually, he kind of liked it.
If you guys get a chance, I would also suggest the BBC radio drama of this, which I quite like. Their Vimes is excellent.
I'll keep that in mind.
Although the Carrot is played as Welsh.
Well, I didn't like the Carrot voice because he's not dumb.
No.
And I feel like the voice acting sort of was trying to play him as less intelligent than he is. He's actually incredibly intelligent.
I got a different read. I just kind of got, they were trying to go for muscled but naive. I was getting more of a naivete vibe.
Yeah.
I like to think of Carrot as basically the Discworld's Steve Rogers, but not the angry one.
The one from what are they called? The
comics?
No, so you're in detention.
So you've joined the City Watch.
Yes. Oh, son. The one who says son a bunch.
Like 5 minutes after waking up in the future, Steve Rogers.
Exactly. I will say that while in Guards Guards, Carrot is very sort of getting his feet under him and still very cheerful. As later books go on, he becomes more cognizant of his role in the whole thing. Because that's the other part about Carrot. He has, you know, he was found by his dwarven parents. And there was a sword nearby. There was a flaming carriage. You know, everybody else had been killed, strangely.
A strange birthmark?
There's a strange crown-shaped birthmark. You know, Carrot is one of two big plot...
coupons?
I would say he's one of the two big things that start the plot in this story. Carrot arriving in town, and, as Pippin started to say way back 10 minutes ago, the theft of the book. And what was that book, everybody?
The Summoning of Dragons.
Not at all suspicious.
Nah.
And don't bother reading the back of the book, because there is no back of the book. It got charred off.
In Screams, perhaps?
They just did it wrong. I'll do it right.
It's the castle. Ah!
No, ah! Back of the throat.
Must have died while writing it.
Well, that's
anyway.
What it says.
But yes, those are the antics of the I guess, villains, the elucidated brethren.
Yeah, well, they're being run by a guy named the Supreme Grandmaster, who is the true villain. And what's interesting about the elucidated brethren is that they're just, like, regular city folk. They are a demonstration of the mundanity of evil, or the boringness of evil. The petty gripes and, you know, little things that make you just do shitty stuff, which is not at all relevant to today's world.
Oh, man, there were some bits where I went, oh.
And once, the Supreme Grandmaster's monologue, you know, he, like, assumes he's better than these guys that he's tricking. But he's also doing the same exact thing. And says they are hanging people by their figgins.
Well, he's convinced all of his elucidated brethren to summon dragons. So as to force, basically, a change of political power in Ankh-Morpork from the patrician back to a monarchy.
A monarchy they control.
A monarchy they control, because nobody can control the patrician.
No.
So better to just kill him or have him deposed by something that the people will all get behind. Monarchs, am I right? Everybody loves a king.
Well, the point is of that is that Ankh-Morpork loves a good story.
Yeah.
And what gets me about the story is that, in a way, the bad guys win, and then we have to deal with it for the rest of the book.
Yeah.
The evil plot they have succeeds.
It totally works.
Yeah. They just didn't think the...
They didn't plan for the follow-through.
Well, no. I feel for the Lucid Brethren because I don't think they were ever shown the book.
No.
So they were not working with all the information.
No.
And they were still bad guys who shouldn't have done it.
If I can make an extended metaphor that I will then not finish, suspiciously. But you have these people who want to put a puppet in place. They, because they want control over, the area. And so then they, go about it thinking that they can get this really dangerous and out of control thing to behave the way they want. And then suddenly that dangerous and out of control thing is in power and they can't control it anymore.
They're lied to the entire time by the Supreme Grandmaster. It's explicitly stated in the narration that he's lying to them.
Yeah.
Because one of the lines that always gets me is how you could tell someone a lie to get them to follow you, and then when you're done with it, you can just give them a new lie, and they'll follow that one. And you can just keep repeating it until you don't need them anymore. Or they'll believe the lie so wholeheartedly that they'll just lie for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Prescient.
So they're summoning dragons, but is this the only dragon that exists in this world, ladies and gentlemen?
No. There are swamp dragons.
The cute little icky little swamp dragons that ladies wear on their shoulders.
They are to the noble dragon as pugs are to wolves.
Yep. And the dog metaphor goes on for a while with describing the swamp dragons and like, aw.
Swamp dragons can breathe fire, but Terry Pratchett goes at length to describing how it happens, which is basically through various complicated chemical means, which sometimes don't work and they explode.
Most of the time don't work and they explode.
Hence why most of the larger dragon species have died off and need to be summoned, say, via magic.
What?
Weird. Like, justifying the backstory?
In a fantasy novel, how dare you?
I know.
And then when the noble dragon shows up, he starts like going, wait a moment, that's not physically possible.
Every time the dragon shows up, someone's all like, that's not how physics works.
It looks way too heavy.
And then it proceeds to burninate everything, and they're too busied with other things to worry about physics.
Well, they do figure it out.
They do, yeah.
And it's because the old dragons figured out how to eat magic.
Dun, da, da.
Which,
yep.
In this universe, makes sense.
Makes sense. Wise. Like, okay, yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was just kind of brilliant that it tied right back to the library again.
Everything turns back to libraries.
Well, because, guys, I mean, knowledge is power.
Yes.
Literally in this case, I mean, literally magical power. But anyway.
What I love about this book is that one of the first murders that happened, because, you know, they summon the dragon. The dragon burns to a crisp from people, because this is a gradual process. The Supreme Master is, you know, proving to his people that this is possible. And they happen to do it, like, right next to Sam Vimes. Sam Vimes, who is beaten down, drunk, barely cares. Well, no, that's not true. He cares too much.
And that's why he's drunk.
But he's like this close to being completely useless. And then that happens and he has to make a choice. And the choice is be completely useless or do something. And he sort of says, I'll be completely useless later, but I have to finish this first. And that drive is so important to his character.
And it really drives him
throughout
the rest of the story, despite like all the setbacks that happen. Mm-hmm. The fact that, I mean, the Night's Watch is a little incompetent.
And despite the fact that he is, at this point, still an alcoholic.
Oh, yeah. A barely functioning alcoholic.
To be fair, he never stops being an alcoholic. Sure. Later books, he stops drinking.
Yeah.
But he's always aware that this, and I mean, I think it's incredibly nuanced, and Pratchett does a great job with this.
I'm not sure I want to go any further without mentioning the local dragon expert.
Oh, yes, I was about to bring it up. Please do, Pip.
Local dragon expert, Lady Sybil Ramkin, who is described as sort of like a Valkyrie in big boots.
Yeah. The other part about this book is that it works as a mystery novel. Like, just because we know who's doing it to a degree, we sort of know who's doing it. But we get to watch competency. We get to watch, Sam Vimes figure this shit out. So he comes across something that flies, burns people to a crisp, and has claws. And he thinks to himself, well, maybe I should find someone who might know something about this. So we get to follow in the footsteps of the great detective. It's so cool.
Great is still a little strong term here for Vimes at this point in his story.
I would contend that considering the amount of hungover he is, this is pretty great.
Lady Sybil trains dragons and becomes involved in the plot for the rest of the story.
Because there are dragons involved. She really fucking loves dragons. And also, there's a handsome officer of the watch.
Well, handsome.
She is no fool.
A captain.
Captain of the watch. And much like Carrot, she does not know.
I was just about to say, like, it's charmingly similar. A respect for the position that everybody else in Ankh-Morpork seems to have decided is dumb.
She probably doesn't realize because she was too busy hanging out with their dragons.
Yeah, it's very clearly horse ladies. Equivalent thereof.
Lady Sybil Ramkin, I believe it's at very least implied, is one of the most high-ranking nobles in the city of Ankh-Morpork. I'm not sure if she's actually a duchess. Not yet.
No, that's Quirm.
Mm. Yeah, it's a duchess of Quirm, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we're getting a little in the weeds, though.
Yeah. My point is, she's an extremely high-rank woman, and Vimes is an extremely low-rank man. And they do not know how to read each other. But gosh darn it, they want to.
In later books becomes a fascinating discussion of class, but we're talking about this book.
Yeah. Well, as I said, they succeeded in summoning the dragon. Stuff happens. Lots of people get burned. And as I said, the Brethren's plan works. They have their puppet king defeat the dragon. I'm doing huge air quotes here. It disappears. There's a lot of fun back and forth of the City Watch going like, that's kind of strange that it just went poof like that. You'd think it'd be messier.
You'd think there'd be dragon bits.
Yeah. they were like, there needs to be bits.
But there was some pretty smoke, so.
But sure enough, the dragon found a way back.
And is pissed.
I mean, because riding a tiger only works for so long. And then eventually, the tiger bucks you off and eats you.
And in this case, it does so in the form of becoming the new king of Ankh-Morpork.
Because it burninates the one who was going to be king because it defeated it. And the people of Ankh-Morpork did the equation in their head. If you defeat the dragon, you become king. So if the dragon defeats the king, it becomes king. That's how it works. And also, they were staring down the barrel of a fire-breathing monster. So...
But then the commentary happens.
How so?
Because the people of Ankh-Morpork also do the continue the calculations of, well, this dragon's in power, and it's a dragon. And dragons have a very interesting foreign policy.
Yeah, eventually, because Ankh-Morpork is Ankh-Morpork, they do not see a downside of having a dragon king. And, like most bad ideas that they have to live with, they eventually go, no, this was our idea from the start. And it's a great idea, fuck you.
Well, and then that's where we start seeing, I have to say, I think what Pratchett was going for, which is that this is why you need to have sort of this outside judicial system that says, no, wait, it is a bad idea.
Look over here, they're wanting to sacrifice virgins.
Like, what exactly are you willing to do? And the answer is, it shouldn't be that. Particularly since the only virgin of high rank that anyone can find, unfortunately...
Is
Sybil Ramkin. None of whom are pleased by this revelation.
Even the dragon is kind of just disgusted with the situation.
Which is fascinating because, you know, dragons, it's very self-aware. It's like, you know, dragons, we're meant to fight each other and hoard gold and stuff like that. That's just what we are. Humans, you sacrifice each other? What?
No, it's not just you sacrifice each other. You're fighting each other as, you know, part and parcel. It's that you can go and say that it's moral to do so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the dragon is very aware that it is, you know, kind of an asshole.
Yeah.
It has no compunction about being an asshole, but it doesn't try to say, but I'm a good person.
Yeah.
Yeah, it knows. It knows it's an asshole. But I guess, kind of skipping on ahead here towards the conclusion of the story, Vimes, with the help of, the help of the City Watch that has been kind of reinvigorated, thanks in part to, like, I guess Vimes finding purpose again,
and,
right?
And Carrot popping up, you know, just with his solid belief that obviously it should be this way.
And yeah. None of them wanting to disappoint him.
That's a very, that's a big part of Carrot. He has that big open face and you just don't want to disappoint him.
Like, who's going to tell him that that's not how it works?
Well, and eventually what I love is that he comes to weaponize that, which is fantastic. I think in this book he's still a little lumpy in terms of characterization, but I think Pratchett really ironed it out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he has a few books.
Yeah.
I mean, that just means that Carrot is growing as a character, Ooh.
Yay. On the time when Lady Sybil is about to be sacrificed, Vimes and company come and save the day. And the swamp dragon that Vimes has been taking care of figures some stuff out, right?
Yeah, it took me literally until I am today years old, and it took me until I think 3 days ago rereading this book for the umpteenth time to realize that there is a complicated fart joke in this. That basically, dragons, as you know, spit flames from their mouths. Lady Sybil Ramkin has accidentally bred a swamp dragon that figures out how to flame in reverse.
A fart joke.
And therefore barrels around like a drone, we would think now, or like a little speeding bullet, a jet. And it's working on incredibly cold flame as opposed to a hot flame. And so that's all fun.
Oh. But yeah, and the swamp dragon, Errol, defeats the noble dragon. But it turns out there's more to this than we thought.
And they live happily ever after.
Well, why is that, Pippin?
Because the noble dragon was a female of its species. And to be completely heteronormative, Errol is a male of its species. And it was a weird, complicated mating ritual.
And also, it's a parallel to, of course, Vimes and Ramkin.
Mm. Yeah.
Yep.
She could kick his ass.
Yeah, she could.
And then they go flying off, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
The patrician is released from the from the dungeons. All right, he releases himself from the dungeons because, again, he has created this entire environment down to his liking. So he's been quietly playing checkers by himself in the dungeons,
safely away from a dragon.
Safely away from a dragon and from anyone who has any ideas about chopping his head off.
And then was it wants the Supreme Chancellor. He gets defeated by Carrot.
And the power of metaphor.
Because Sam Vimes tells Carrot to throw the book at him.
Should also reveal the Supreme Grand Master was in fact the patrician's secretary, who then became secretary to the king, dragon. Yeah, I think that his whole motive was the general pettiness of evil.
Yeah.
Always feeling like you should have more power than you do.
Yeah. And so, you know, he didn't want to be the secretary to a patrician. He wanted to be the secretary to a king. A king can do a lot more things than a patrician can, although that's very one-dimensional thinking.
Yeah, he's not one for imagination.
No. But that's the mystery. That's, you know, we may know a lot of what's going on, but we get to follow Vimes, discover who, and it is a through line. It is possible as a reader to make the guess, which is what I love about mystery novels.
Mm. And also to be checked and go, was it the patrician the entire time? And go, oh, no.
And then finally, the watch is brought in. They're going to be thanked by everyone. And strangely, the patrician has already planning how to sort of shuffle them into the background again, which is basically to buy them off. And then they sort of guilelessly are unbuy-offable, because instead of asking for, like, jewels and wealth and to retire and no longer be the watch, they they ask for a new kettle and a dartboard.
And a modest raise.
A $5 raise.
Yeah. and so that's really the beginning of the Night Watch gaining in power. I don't think at this point that the patrician has connected the dots between Carrot's past and his sword and his mysterious birthmark.
At the very end, he does, which is why he has he very heavily suggests that Carrot be promoted and lets Carrot know that he's very proud of him and is going to be watching his career with interest.
Yeah.
And he should do very well in the watch.
Exactly. And I mean,
and only the Watch.
Which in future books becomes a really fascinating discussion over and over again of between the Patrician and Carrot of what Carrot's place is in Ankh-Morpork. Because Carrot is, theoretically, the lost, you know, scion to the throne of Ankh-Morpork.
The once and future king.
Yeah, and the Patrician is very aware that, you know, this is a fantasy novel. Kings have certain powers. And it's a fascinating balancing act. Anyway.
Yeah, that's for future books. We can have future episodes about those.
We can do a continuing series of The Watch.
So we've been talking about this for a while now, probably longer than we should. I mean, it's a novel, so of course it's going to stem out into long discussion.
It's legit one of my favorites. I love the Discworld a lot.
Same. In one of the future tattoos I will get, it's definitely a Discworld quote.
Oh, I should get a Discworld tattoo.
Yeah. I mean, it's there is a reason why Pratchett became Sir Terry Pratchett. He really is a truly astonishing writer. But, guys, we've talked about it. I think that we need to talk about changes.
Changes!
I want to go first.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
Here's the deal. Pratchett was a very new writer. Not new writer. He was sort of... He's not even mid-career at this point. He's like... He's getting to the first hump of getting betterness. But there's still some weak points. I have to say, I would, story-wise, I would probably change the Elucidated Brethren. There's a lot of gags related to, you know, secret societies. There's a really extended joke sequence about, secret passwords. I'm just bored of it. We see him in later books be able to do something similar with things like political dissidents, which is frankly just as good and or the same thing, but without the stupid joke sequences. So in a book that is otherwise, you know, I think pretty great, it's a little difficult to find things that are changeable, but for me, I think I would switch that up. I'm not sure what I would switch it to, but that's my change.
Do something off the top of your head.
Damn you.
Do it.
Okay. Actually, what I might do is bring in the... So the Patrician does not work solely alone. He technically does have something of an advisory council made up of the guild leaders. In terms of the way he's created his little aquarium here, he has... the Patrician has set it up such that the guilds are very sort of self-policing. And he technically talks to them and solicits their opinions about stuff. But really, it's just to quietly make adjustments to his model. To be fair, this is something that Pratchett again does in later books. But I think I would maybe have one of the Otter Guilds step in and have this issue and be trying to take over from that perspective.
The Baker's Guild.
Well, actually, I mean, stealing a later plot to a certain degree. I might use the, who are the people who make coats of arms?
The heraldry?
Heralds.
Yeah, I would do something with the heralds. They seem like people who would be very invested in their being kings. But again, I'm sort of stealing some plots here from future
books. In alliance
books.
With the portrait makers.
The painters of the sea. Yeah, there you go. There's a guild, the artisans.
There we go.
I don't think I'm stealing from them. Ooh, if you want to get really fussy, you know, it could be, frankly, these animal handlers, the swamp dragon coalition or what have you, the unusual beast guild, of which Lady Ramkin is not part of these shenanigans. Perhaps she's on the outs, or perhaps this is stuff that's going on underneath her. That she is unaware of or starting to become aware of. And so she brings in Vimes rather than a crime happening in front of him.
Mm. I do not like that.
Yeah, I'm going to have to disagree.
Yeah, I'm not loving it. I just don't like the gag of the secret society.
Well, for me, the secret society Well, they have these rituals and putting on airs. There's a great mundanity to them.
These are the common folk.
Yeah, and that's, and it's that, like, kind of, like, they are, like, a microcosm of the city.
Yeah. Maybe I just want fewer jokes. Or better constructed jokes.
I like the jokes.
Wow. First of all, you're wrong. Second of all...
I agree with Alex.
Betrayal.
All right, but let's be real. If I were going to agree with one of you...
All right, legit. Well, okay, so for better or for worse, that's my change. I think it would turn into a different book, and maybe not as good a book. I'll say it.
Pratchett is Pratchett.
Pratchett's Pratchett. Man, I don't have a fucking knighthood. Yet.
Oh, man, I have some bad news for you.
Oh, are you going next then, Pip?
Or are you just going to reveal the fact that I'm not eligible for a knighthood? Which, frankly, rude.
I was going to point out that you're not eligible for a knighthood.
So rude.
But I can go next if that makes it feel better.
Maybe it will.
I think you got to make up for it now, Pep.
Yeah, I have to diss your whole plan.
Oh, man, you're going to look like an asshole if you do, because what I'm thinking is, as much as I love Terry Pratchett and his novels, especially this early on, there's still a bit of a problem with women. Lady Sybil Ramkin is wonderful. I'm in love with her. Where she goes, so goes my nation. But she's like the only woman in the story.
Yeah.
And to be fair, bucking a lot of stereotypes, but at the same time sort of going in hard on others.
I will step in to say, no, you're wrong. She's not the only woman. There is also Minty the girl back home.
Is only talked about.
And Mrs. Palm and her daughters.
Is only talked about.
And they're prostitutes. Go on.
And they're prostitutes. Which Carrot does not realize. He just thinks that they're sweet young ladies. Which they are.
You fight you.
Carrot is not wrong in his assessment of any of them. But yeah, Lady Sybil is the only woman with a speaking role.
That is a bit awkward.
And again, Pratchett gets better about this later.
By the next guard book, really.
Yeah, because there's Angua and Cheery Littlebottom, I think.
Yeah.
In that fascinating discussion of gender.
Technically, Minty goes under that fascinating discussion of gender as well, but go on.
Sure, though I noticed how... Early on, Pratchett says that the dwarves do not have gender, so use he. And then proceeds to refer to female dwarves as she.
Yep.
Yeah, he's still young in his career.
I feel like later books he might have been better about that.
Yeah.
But I did notice it in this one. Oh, wait. I lied. I lied to everyone. There's another female character.
There is another.
With a speaking role. That being the dragon.
Oh, yeah!
Which, to be fair, though, is also still not great.
Yeah, still not great.
Hey, she knows who she is.
But then it's brought low by a man.
Fucking men.
Men are the worst.
Yeah! Ignore the two on the line.
Theoretically, we could also call Ankh Morpork a woman, for the city is a woman.
Indeed.
And the woman is a city, and Sam Vimes is just finding a way to make out with Ankh Morpork.
Sam Vimes was brought low by a woman. And that's...
Oh.
And that woman was the city.
Oh, now I get it.
Oh, you were today years old?
Yeah. Khan kept on saying that he was brought down by a woman, and we never find out who that is. And then, oh.
I mean, I'm not sure Colin is clever enough to make that metaphor.
But he is dumb enough to hear Sam drunkenly talk about the city as if it were a woman, and then go, oh, it was a woman.
Yeah, that's fair.
So what would you change then?
I mean, I would add more female characters.
Colin did not need to be a girl. Nobby, I'm sorry, did not need to be a dude. Nobby didn't. Well, maybe Nobby needed to be a dude because Nobby is a pretty good joke.
Yeah, I'm not even. I think I'd be weirdly okay with the Watch being men at this point because they're representing a sort of
old school
Brotlow sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there are plenty of other side characters. There's Cut My Young Throat Dibbler. There's the librarian.
There's the patrician.
Yeah,
I was about to say Lord Vetinari, yeah.
Lady Vetinari. I would be so into that. I'm, like, literally thinking of it right now.
Trans Lord Vetinari. Still Lord Vetinari.
Yes.
But fuck everyone. But yeah, so just add more side characters, maybe some main characters. There was another female at the very end. The Duchess of Quirm. This is not the point.
Wow, Pip, you keep losing here.
But no, it's a dude-heavy book.
Too many dicks on the dance floor?
I'm not sure how much it would change, but some of it might read a bit differently. Because they're complaining about not having power, and how they have been done wrong. Mm-hmm. And you know who's actually has no power and have been done wrong? Women.
Mm.
Yeah. I like it.
And when you hear their complaints, go, wait a moment, what?
You know what's weird is that there were no women amongst the Elucidated Brethren either.
That we're aware of.
Well, I know, but there were no speaking women. Brother Fingers was a dude.
Oh yeah, they were all referred to as brother, weren't they?
Yeah.
The brethren, brothers, yeah.
But like, you could have added a woman in there. It would have been a villain woman, but women can be villains too.
It's true.
Better ones.
Speak, brother seamstress. What was it? Screet or treat? Who was
Reet?
Reet. It was Reet all along.
Dun dun dun.
Oh, the carrot would have been so sad.
There, that's my change.
Wow.
Holy shit. Like, for real?
But for real, Zal, what's your actual change?
My change is, I would kind of want to do... thing is, with his carrot, he's done really well here, but I kind of wanted, like, it's more dwarves in the city than just that one dwarf bar.
Yeah. I mean, we do in later books, but no, as the development of his character in this one.
You know what I'm getting? Is that what we really want to do is just read the next Watch book?
Pretty much.
What are we even doing here, guys? Let's just hang up our headphones.
The next one, Feet of Clay? Or is that the third one?
I think Men-at-Arms.
Yeah, I think you're right, it's Men-at-Arms.
I will say, by Feet of Clay, that's when I start actively crying while reading it.
But basically, it's when and Vine starts getting his middle of the book. Well, look at this. Look at this systemic failure or that I'm looking at. And oh god, I'm part of it. And how do we actually change it? Monologues.
Okay, so you want more dwarf scenes?
Just more care interacting than just reacting.
He's still a gag.
I think,
in this book.
Yeah.
He's a plot motivating gag. He does propel the plot, but.
And he's great at being that gag.
Yeah.
And he's a receptacle for, exposition.
Yeah, but he doesn't. I mean, I think that calls back to my whole thing where he's a little uneven to me in this one. Like, sometimes he does understand metaphors, you know?
Yeah.
Well. He is human.
I know, but it's still not consistent with where I would expect him to be at this point in his emotional journey.
Hmm.
Boom. Hmm.
Vulnerables.
Emotional journey is the wrong phrase, but you know, I'm going to go with it. I do think that he is still being used as largely a plot device, as a gag, as a exposition device, and so on.
He's pretty much used in the same way as Nobby and Colin.
Yeah. Colin? I thought it was Colon.
Colon. And I keep on...
Well, because it's funny, because it's a colon.
Yeah.
It's a body part.
I thought it was the random grammatical notation.
Anyway. Brendan.
Well, I kind of wish I had something stronger here, because I think you guys covered a lot of the bases here, because I was actually of a similar mind to Pippin here, noting the fact that there was only really the one major female character. That's the thing that kind of stuck out to me, because I kind of understood, you know, Carrot for being the plot device that he was, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And also just receiver of exposition. So I'm going to go with a standby here for me. And that is, I think we're prime for a good, like a serialization on, say, like TV, Netflix, that kind of thing. I just want to have a good, like, comedy mystery series.
I mean, would not mind a major Night Watch show.
Half season per book, or a season per book. Who can have it?
Season per book. I think you'd easily do that.
There are a lot of watch books. It's a thing.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I will point out that there is a radio drama series about the, like, the BBC has done this.
But yeah, but that's an old radio program. We can do multiple different platforms.
I'm gonna share my secret hope.
Go for it.
You know how the Good Omens series is coming out soon?
Uh-huh.
Neil Gaiman is a big name behind that.
Yes.
But I'm kind of hoping that the series shines a brighter light on Terry Pratchett in more mainstream popular media, and that then we'll get potentially these sort of adaptations of his work.
And that's what I'm getting at here, because that's what I was thinking about when I was just writing this down here in the first place, was that, you know, Good Omens is coming out. We also have a very strong resurgence in like the popularity of like fantasy games and stuff like that. I mean, you can't throw five pages away. What's that?
You can't just throw a swamp dragon.
You can't just throw a swamp dragon, and you can't just go like two pages away on the internet without stumbling into somebody's like D&D hot take or something, you know?
D&D game set in Discworld.
I'd play it.
Al, that's every D&D game that takes place in a city.
And also, there are like some decent Discworld movies.
I need to watch them.
I mean, not my moist, but it's still a decent and going
close. Hashtag not your moist.
My one worry is that like a producer type who goes like, yeah, we should capitalize on the growing popularity of Terry Pratchett here, and we'll do The Color of Magic.
Ugh.
And I'm like,
they've done it.
No.
There is in fact a BBC TV miniseries that was, I've seen the actor. They fucking did it.
Yeah, I think I saw that on Prime at one point.
Yeah, not interested.
And that's why we don't have the Watch series.
That's why we can't have nice things.
But yeah, no, I'm just like, I want a TV series so I can just binge it on Netflix.
Okay, let me ask you this. What do you think would not translate well?
What would not translate well?
Yeah, so that you would have to have a workaround, because mediums are different, as we all know.
And that's why I'm never upset if there are major changes between a book and a movie, because some things don't translate well.
We'd probably have to maybe tweak around some of the more subtle like character play and stuff like that, like, you know, the growing romance between Sybil and Vimes, perhaps. I don't know. That'll get fleshed out in the script.
I think one of the things that we see in the books that I think would not pop up well are those flyby jokes as part of description, for instance, or the omniscient narrator.
Oh, yeah.
It would be depending entirely upon both circumstances and dialogue.
Oh, the gods rolled. They rolled a six.
Yeah, things like that. If you try to do a voiceover, then it just ruins the joke. It makes it way too obvious.
No.
Yeah.
No voiceover.
So, I mean, I think that's why it's more important to do the stronger books where the characters, the situation, and the dialogue do hold up.
Oh, rather, the only time voiceover happens is when Carrot sends letters home, because he writes his mother home every single episode.
Yes. Okay. Oh my God, can it be the opening narration?
Yes.
That's beautiful and I love
it. And he's just describing his day.
Dear mom.
Well, and also you could theoretically have it like chicken scratching at the bottom or around the, you know, in the scenes. So you can still get the weird punctuation and the capitalization.
Oh, and actually you can put footnotes in it. Like putting footnotes in the, like just as a random scrawl on the screen.
I think they did something like that with the, a reference for that would be the Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell BBC thing. I think they figured out a way to put the footnotes in, which may have been that. And apparently it was very successful. We can't thank Sherlock for a lot, but I think we can thank it for introducing the fact that text on screen works as a narrative device.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that's my thing.
I think you should do that as a as a writing prompt.
A spec script?
I think you should do absolutely. Spec strips are amazing, and everyone should do them.
And they can get you noticed.
They can get you noticed. And they are legit fanfic!
Woo!
But yeah, no, I think that's... I would be super interested in seeing what your take would be. Hmm. Or yours, readers. We'll listeners. Or yours, listeners, like I said.
Readers of Terry Pratchett, listeners of our other
there
podcast.
You go, there you go. Let's save
good
it. Let's
save,
save it.
Good save.
They won't know a thing.
Not if you edit it, right? So.
Keep it all in.
I'm planning on it. Don't worry.
Hey, guys. You know what time it is?
Is it time for a flame? Because there's dragons?
Wow. Wow. Motherfucker.
Oh, I appreciate that, and I wish to subscribe to your newsletter or podcast.
Ooh, subscribe to our podcast, listeners, and also our Patreon page, and get more terrible fucking jokes.
Amazing jokes.
Hey, those classes are paying off, man.
All right, it's time for a game, guys. What do we want to play?
What do we want to play?
Well, I think one of us had their eye on a butterfly flapping its wings, right?
That was me.
Which one? Remind me, because I don't feel like looking at our description.
Well, that one, Pip, is what happens when we make a small change early on in the story.
Oh, I've got a depressing one.
Oh, no. Go for it. Oh, I know what it is, but go on.
Yeah, I think we all have.
We all know what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Say
yeah,
it.
Yep. Vimes doesn't get out of that gutter.
Oh, that's not the one it is.
Aww.
And also, that is really depressing.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right, what happens?
Ankh-Morpork is destroyed.
Okay,
well,
yes.
Is it, though? I mean...
Maybe Lord Veterinari gets out and rebuilds from the rubble.
I mean, I think certainly Sybil Ramkin's dead.
Yep.
That's a given.
Yeah.
The Watch.
I think the dragon still rules the city.
Yeah. But I think the Ankh-Morpork as a whole is doing pretty well. It's going to war with all of its neighboring city-states. It's winning.
Carrick got flamed.
Carrick got flamed. Nobby got flamed. Colin got flamed. I think the only issue is...
Mm-hmm. Eventually the magic runs out and they're left leaderless.
Yep. A very good point.
In ruins.
Oh.
How long do you give it, do you think?
I don't know.
How much magic is in books, librarian?
Well, not just that, but there's lots of magic in the world. Do they start sending people out to get it? Like, because we see the Elucidated Brethren doing that. They steal bits of magic to feed. Maybe that becomes the crux of their whatever.
Does a dragon head to Lanker?
Okay, but here's the deal. That means we get a book where Granny Weatherwax the Witch fights a dragon.
Oh, shit. She would win.
I would like to contend that is an amazing story.
She'd win.
She would try to take it over, man. She'd get in its mind.
Oh, man. Doesn't like it when people do that.
She'd have to fight herself to not become part of the dragon. Oh, my God.
Oh, that'd be great.
And
Pippin, and write it.
And the dragon sees a handsome looking and boy dragon. It's like, and Granny's like, what?
All right. So, aww. Pip. Well, okay, I'm going to go with my depressing one. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Carrot never comes down from the mountains.
Ooh, yeah, you took mine.
Carrot never comes down from the mountains. So I would say that the big change he brings is that he shows that, yes, the watch can actually do something. It may not be permanent. It may be a bad idea, but they can fucking do something. Just the ability to stand up and say, that's wrong, I'm taking you downtown, causes trouble. And it also causes people to stop and think and discuss and so on. And before that, everybody, including Vimes, is of the opinion that they can't do anything. And so it doesn't matter if Vimes pulls himself up. He might go, and I would say Vimes might pull himself from the gutter. He sees that something's going on. And what he might do is go back home to Cockbill Street and, you know, try to warn the people there. Maybe we have a whole plot where he's sneaking people out of the city. But it's not a city watch deal. Colin and Nobby, they're out of the picture.
Point of order.
Go on.
If Carrot never shows up, there's no reason for the watch to be in the shades that night.
Ooh.
Okay.
So they don't know that there's a dragon until it's too late.
Very good point. But I will say, I do still think that Vimes would... No, he'd just go get drunk, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Yep. He'd get drunk. Yep. He would never meet Sybil Ramkin.
Yeah, because he doesn't take the...
He doesn't take the plaster cast of the footprint, yeah. So he's not... And this calls back to Pippin, your plot change, which is... The women that are there are part of the way that they are plot inducers in and of themselves is because... What's his head? Vimes is looking to impress her or something. And that's a little... Okay. But that's no longer the case. So he's not pulling himself up by his bootstraps or whatever. He goes, gets drunk, and thinks about, oh, this city. This city, right?
Okay. Right, I got one.
Okay.
Right. Wants never gets that book.
Oh, wait.
So
he never gets that book. Because... The pants of time got bifurcated.
The trouser legs of time?
You're right. Those then. Those.
Pants are different in Britain.
You're right. Very different.
hey.
They come to an end sooner.
We get to...
Oh.
Anyways, the librarian has this thing about it. Like, he had this choice to do this.
Oh, that's right.
Mm. And he chooses not to because... That would mess up with time.
Well, okay, to be more clear, this is something we didn't go over in the plot rehash. The librarian does go back in time via magic.
Via librarian.
To make sure what happens. And he does have the opportunity to stop it.
Yeah. We are taught in library school how to avoid...
bifurcating the trousers of time.
Yeah, there's a whole class about it. There's time anomaly discussions.
Pippin, are you supposed to tell us this?
Oh, God, we're going to get killed, aren't we?
Listen.
Not in this universe.
Listen, just, when the men in suits come, just do what they say.
Lie?
Brendan will be the first to go.
Yeah. No, Wands never gets that book, is never able to summon undead dragon, and it just continues holding the lucid brethren in meetings until the other brothers miss a week or two, and then a month, and just stop going altogether. But no, for the other characters, Care comes to the city, and there's no major crisis. You know, not a current major crisis, but because this happens, and the timing of this is very story stuff. Because this is the Discworld, but it is very formative for these characters.
And for the city.
Yeah.
Because the city needs a hero, and what they got was the watch.
Yep. And so the watch stays forgotten. Vimes starts spending more and more times in that gutter. Like, he has this new, fresh, young man show the ropes to, but can he actually get up the will to do this?
Well, the issue is that he shows Carrot the rope, or somebody shows Carrot the ropes, and Carrot duly learns them, except that what it is it's the same powerlessness as everybody else. It's learned helplessness is what he gets. Which, the only reason that doesn't happen in this trouser leg of time is that the patrician is not around to step in and remake his model. for the time being, everyone's off the leads.
Hmm. And also, of course, Vimes and Sybil do not meet.
Oh.
Yeah.
Meh.
Yeah.
Hmm. So, man, y'all just have Vimes drunk in a gutter and all yours.
Listen, the man is one step away from it at all times. It does not take far
in
this
story.
He is at his lowest.
That's true.
Yeah, at the which is a great place to start for a book. I mean, to be honest.
Oh yeah.
So I think I'll bring a little bit of cheer into this.
Okay.
Sergeant Colon's shot actually is a one in a million shot.
Ooh.
Slays the dragon.
And there's dragon chunks everywhere.
Everywhere.
The book ends earlier, but, you know, it probably has a similar ending to what ends up happening. But you know what? Just giving him that one.
Give him a win.
One thing. I mean, chances are it was actually probably like a 1 in 10 million shot is what he actually was doing mm-hmm. there. They got the math wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it just does something to get us out of this depressing gutter. Jeez.
He wins.
You know, any gutter to Vimes is a depressing gutter.
It's home.
Oh.
Wow.
I don't know what else that would actually change, because it's like, yeah, they'd still probably just get the rays and the kettle and the dartboard.
I think Errol might explode. Ugh.
Oh,
well,
poor Errol.
His change into the tiny little speeding bullet that could... is because the larger dragon is still around.
Well, then maybe Errol is just all content and acting like a show dog still.
I don't think he's content.
Remember, he's very intelligent. He gets described that way. He's got the weird intelligence going on that the other swamp dragons don't.
Well, maybe he can... Errol discovers that he can go through the trouser legs of time and then can go hang out with the dragon nice. In some other universe. There we go.
Actually, you know what? I'm gonna switch yours up a little bit. We're not gonna end this story soon. Errol becomes the new trouble.
Dun dun dun.
Oh.
I like Errol, though. I don't want him to be trouble.
You can have a, not a villain, but you can have an antagonist. You can have a well-meaning one. You can have, you know, Clifford the Big Red Dog, I'm sorry, does have some issues living on that island.
Clifford lives on an island?
Yeah, it's Birdwell Island. So anyway, wait, you didn't know this? Anyway,
I know nothing about Clifford the Big Red Dog, y'all. I know he's big, he's red, he's a dog.
So you know three things, Clifford. Let's move on.
That's really all you need to know.
Also, I just now remembered one of the things that I wanted to talk about earlier. Do you mind? Did anyone else have a weird sense of what, like, not knowing when things were, like, how long things were taking place?
Oh, yeah, the time was a bit skewy.
Oh, really? I didn't really have a problem with that, but it's...
Everything keeps on happening. But then
keeps happening all at once?
Well, yeah, and then they get things like when you brought me the plaster cast the other week.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah,
it seemed to be like day after day after day, but the characters seemed to, in their time, be experiencing it week after week after week.
Like,
huh?
At least a month.
Well, I knew that the dragon had been in charge for some time, and that the monarch, the king, had been in charge for some time.
Had he? He got burned at the coronation.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he still had to be, like, doing king. Remember, because they had to go through the whole process of, like, and by the way, here's a king, and they did stuff. I don't know.
I think a couple weeks have passed.
Yeah. What with one thing and another, 2 weeks passed.
It didn't do a great job of actually...
No, I'll grant you that.
Because they made a big deal about how fast the bunting went up. Like, how it seemed to happen overnight.
Mm. Oh, shit, for the coronation. That's right. Good call. Hmm. Huh.
Reading comprehension.
Other thing we'd change. There we go. Bonus.
But this can be explained by a time in the Discworld being kind of wonky. Thank you. Thanks, Grinding Weatherwax.
Oh, man. So that was Guards continuing to be my favorite Discworld novel, even though I kept saying, man, the later ones are better.
Take us away, Bren.
As always, if you have a story to submit, head on over to nostoryissacred.com/submission. Follow us on Twitter at nostoryissacred, or you can send us an email through contact@nostoryissacred.com. Your hosts have been Alex McDonald, Brendan McDonald, Pippin McDonald, and Catherine Crichton. Editing for this episode was done by Brendan. Transcript done by Ashley DaCosta. Art by Jay Wolf. Show notes and transcript are available at nostoryissacred.com. Thanks for listening, everyone, and please rate, review, and subscribe to No Story is Sacred. You can also visit our Patreon page to support the show and get neat rewards at patreon.com/nostoryissacred. See you next time when we talk about the Nick Cage movie, National Treasure.
I have to steal the Constitution.
The Declaration.
The Declaration.
Fuck it, let's grab the Constitution while we're at it.
Fuck, I mean, we're here, might as well.
They're in the same building, yeah. So until then, where no story is sacred, and any story can be changed. This was Brendan.
This was Pippin.
This was Ox.
And this was Kat.
And we're...
No story is sacred.